Hello and welcome to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Robert Johnson, a York Rite Mason and Knight Templar. Well, I hope you guys all had a sweet weekend. I had to work my local air show, and this year I didn't have a booth. Some of you may know I tried to have a booth for my lodge out at the air show to promote local charity and scholarships, as well as letting people know we were in town. Maybe even gain some interest in becoming Masons. We got a good response last year, but this year I had no volunteers to come out, so no booth this year. Maybe next year. I wanted to mention that I get these notes of encouragement every now and again, and they are from all over. Some from England, Japan, pretty much anywhere. I got two notes last week, one from Nova Scotia and one from Wyoming. Both were great. I just wanted to say thanks for those because it's the reason I keep doing the show. And more importantly, it's why the light has been spread. I wanted to tell you that this show is listened to all over the place. I get statistics from the people who host my files, and I can break it down into countries even. This show is downloaded in, are you ready? 110 countries. Can you believe that? I was dumbfounded when I found out. It's pretty awesome, and it's all thanks to the continued support from the listeners, the supporters, and all the brothers and fellows out there who listen to the show and keep an active mind on Freemasonry and continue to promote Freemasonry throughout the world. So thanks very much. Sometimes people say to me, tell everyone at the show thanks. And for those of you who don't know, the people who work at this show is just me. I'm a one-man writer, producer, and host. My family stands behind me as my support staff, so I have to thank them as much as everyone else. Maybe more for putting up with the late hours. But like I said, thanks to all with the encouraging notes and the listeners. I do this for all the brothers and for all the folks out there who are interested in Freemasonry. The first piece I have for you this week is a paper that is mostly for newly raised masters, edited by Robert H. Starr, Samuel Gompers, Benjamin Franklin Lodge, No. 45, Washington, D.C. You have now received the three symbolic degrees of ancient craft masonry, and I hope soon such instruction in the work of those degrees as well will enable you to pass a creditable examination therein whenever you should visit lodges in this or other jurisdictions throughout the world where you are unknown and cannot be vouched for as a Mason. You have also received, I hope, through the lodge system of Masonic education prescribed by our Grand Lodge, an appreciation of the lessons we are trying to teach and are versed, at least to some extent, in the history, traditions, laws, customs, and usages of the craft. As a part of the Masonic education program, you have been told of your privileges, your duties, and your responsibilities as a member of your Masonic lodge. Some of these may be enumerated briefly as follows: to hold membership in some lodge, to pay regularly and promptly such dues and assessments as your lodge may levy, to attend communications of your lodge, to join in its deliberations, to have a voice in its decisions, and to assist in discharging its responsibilities, among which are volunteer service on committees, donations to Masonic Blood Bank if eligible, assistance in conferring degrees, attendance and assistance at Masonic funeral services when summoned. Your lodge needs your help in these and many other ways. Masonry makes no demands. She provides opportunities. She gives you the key to a door. She opens a path to your feet, but she forces you neither to use the key nor travel the path. She beckons. You may follow or not, as you please. If you follow, you will travel strange ways, but you will find them increasingly pleasant the further you go. This paper is limited to providing information about some of the courtesies and etiquette of a lodge life as generally, although not necessarily universally practiced. Masonry developed its own conventions, governed by tradition, custom, and usage, by which its members act in lodge and in the anteroom and live together without the least friction. Not to proceed according to their dictates is not a Masonic offense. It is merely a lack of Masonic manners. Unless you belong to a most unusual lodge or had a most wise brother for an instructor, it is doubtful if you were told much about these little niceties of lodge conduct. You are supposed to attend your lodge and learn by observation. Entering or retiring from lodge at labor or at refreshment by use of the dew guard, symbol of a Mason's obligations. One of the prerogatives of a worshipful master is to control the admission and retirement of both members and visitors to his lodge. Masons entering a lodge give the due guard to salute the worshipful master at the altar, if the lodge is at labor. This practice assures the worshipful master that the brother knows on which degree the lodge is open. A brother making a wrong sign can be instructed immediately. He can readily determine this before giving the due guard by observing how the square and compasses are placed upon the Holy Bible on the altar. The salute informs the worshipful master the brother is a Mason of the degree of which the lodge is open. If he makes an inferior sign and cannot, on request, give the right one, the worshipful master can then use other means to ascertain that no entered apprentice or fellow craft is present in a Master Mason's lodge. The salute is a silent assurance to the worshipful master, and through him to the brethren, I remember my obligations. Brethren give a similar salute to the worshipful master at the altar upon retiring in order to get permission to leave. No one can enter or leave a lodge room while a lodge is at labor without permission. If the worshipful master does not wish the brother who salutes to retire, he tells him so, instead of responding to the salute. At refreshment, the lodge is in charge of the junior warden in the south, which thus becomes, for the time being, constructively the east. The junior warden's pillar is raised, and the pillar of the senior warden is lowered. The same salutes are given to the junior warden as are usually given to the worshipful master, and for the same reasons in the event a brother wishes to enter or retire. The worshipful master in the east occupies the most exalted position in the gift of the lodge. A lodge which does not honor its worshipful master, not because of what he himself may be, but on account of the honor given him, is lacking in Masonic courtesy. The position he occupies, not the man himself, must be given the utmost respect if the traditions of the fraternity are to be observed. It is therefore to the worshipful master, not to John Smith, who happens to be the worshipful master, that you offer a salute when you enter or retire from lodge. Like any other salute, this may be done courteously and as if you meant it, or perfunctorily, as if you did not care. The man who puts one finger to his hat brim when he speaks to a woman on the street compares poorly with his well-bred neighbor who lifts his hat. Taking the hat off is the modern remains of an ancient custom of knights who removed their helmets in the presence of those they felt their friends, and thus before they wished to honor by showing that they trusted them. A man removes his hat before a woman to show his respect. Touching the brim is but a perfunctory salute. Similarly, the salute to the worshipful master is your renewed pledge of fealty and service, your recognition before all your assembled brethren of your obligations. It is performed before the worshipful master on the altar to show him your veneration for his authority, your respect for all of that for which he stands. To offer your salute as if you were in a hurry, too lazy properly to make it, or bored with its offering, is to be Masonically a bore. Moreover, brethren should not approach the altar with bundles or papers in hand. Some lodges permit smoking during business meeting. Even here, however, a brother is not too respectful who makes a solemn salute to the worshipful master before the altar with a cigarette or cigar either in his mouth or in his hand. Addressing the lodge. In addressing the lodge for any purpose, a brother speaks to the worshipful master. The worshipful master is the lodge. A brother stands to order when addressing the chair, gives a salute, due guard, and penal sign, and begins speech only after the worshipful master's recognition. A brother does not turn his back to the worshipful master to address the lodge without permission from him. He who seconds a motion rises and salutes when doing so. No brother should ever sit while speaking. Moreover, the spectacle of two brethren on their feet at the same time arguing over a motion, facing each other, and ignoring the worshipful master is not one which any worshipful master should permit. But it is also one which no worshipful master should have to prevent. Failure to obey the gavel at once is a grave discourtesy. The worshipful master is all-powerful in the lodge. He can put or refuse to put any motion. He can rule any brother out of order on any subject at any time. He can say what he will and will not permit to be discussed. Brethren who think him unfair, arbitrary, unjust, or acting illegally have redress. The Grand Lodge can be appealed to on any such matter, but in the lodge the gavel emblem of authority is supreme. When a brother is rapped down, he should at once obey without further discussion. It is very bad manners to do otherwise. Indeed, it is close to the line between bad manners and a Masonic offense. Advancement. If an officer is absent, the officers below his station do not necessarily each move up a chair. There is no advancement by right for any office except that of worshipful master. The worshipful master fills any vacancy by temporary appointment. In the absence of the worshipful master, the senior warden presides. In the absence of both the worshipful master and senior warden, the junior warden presides. The worshipful master may ask a past master or any brother he believes qualified to fill a temporary vacant chair. Altar and East. Except in procession during a degree, it is practically universal that the brethren do not pass between the altar and the East in a lodge at labor. Why? This courtesy is rooted in the thought that the worshipful master should have the great lights constantly in view. In theory, the Holy Bible square and compasses on the altar are dedicated to God, the master and the craft, and are in the charge of the master. He draws inspiration from the great lights on the altar to preside over the lodge, and therefore at no time should his view of them be interrupted. This custom is but a pretty courtesy, but it is rooted in a fundamental conception of the craft, that the altar is the center of masonry, and that from it, and the great lights it bears, flow all there is of Masonic inspiration, truth, and light. Altar and lesser lights. You have observed that in our jurisdiction the lesser lights are placed in a triangular form about the altar. It is customary not to walk between the altar and the light. The theory that the altar and the three lights about it represents the sanctum sanctorum, or holy of holies, of the original tabernacle in the wilderness. Into this the high priest could go, but only to return the same way. Brethren enter this symbolic representation in the lodge room, but do not use it as a passageway by passing through it. Altar and West. In passing from south to the north side of the lodge at the labor, or vice versa, between the altar and the senior warden in the west, a brother should look to the east and give the penal sign of the degree of which the lodge is open. Aprons. Brethren who respect the formalities for their lodge will not enter it undressed, that is, without their apron, or while putting on that apron. Aprons should be put on before entering the lodge room. When, as sometimes happens on big nights, there are not enough aprons, a handkerchief may be tucked into the belt to take its place. The spectacle of a late brother hurriedly entering the lodge room at the last moment, tying on his apron as he approaches the altar, is much on a par with a member of a church entering while putting on his collar and tie. As you have already learned, the use of the apron is extremely old, not as with the operative masons, as a protector of clothing and body against tools and stone, but as a badge of honor. In all times and climes, it has been a badge of distinction. It is as such that a mason wears it. The material of the Masonic apron, lambskin, is a symbol of innocence, as the lamb has always been. It is a courtesy much appreciated by all tilers. If brethren leaving the lodge room lay their aprons neatly in a pile, or in the apron box, instead of dropping them anywhere for the tiler to pick them up and put away. Balloting. The etiquette which surrounds the ballot is a reflection of the Masonic thought upon its value and importance. Brethren ballot one at a time after a salute to the worshipful master. No one should leave or enter a lodge room during the taking of a ballot, with the exception of the tiler, if he is a member of the lodge. It is customary to present the box first to the worshipful master for his inspection, then to the wardens. The three principal officers ballot without leaving their seats. In some lodges, the box is passed also to all officers and past masters. What is customary is good manners. It is gentle courtesy for the master to ask the tiler to enter and vote, his place being taken by another meanwhile. This is properly done after all but the tiler have voted. In all grand jurisdictions, the ballot on candidates is secret and inviolable. It is considered un-Masonic for a brother to divulge how he intends to or has balloted, or to attempt to ascertain how another will or has balloted. Peace and harmony are the foundations of all Masonic meetings. For Brother A to learn that Brother B has balloted or will ballot against his friend would disrupt that peace and harmony. The rejection of a candidate is a blow to him who has applied. If everyone knew who had cast the black cube, the rejected man might speedily learn and cause of friction in the profane world would then have come out of a Masonic lodge. It is the duty of every member present to vote, and the worshipful master may oblige him to do so. A brother who does not vote because too lazy or too indifferent or for any other reason is discourteous because he injures the ballot, its secrecy, its importance, and its value. Conclusion. The thoughts above outlined will disclose that good manners in Masonry, like those in civil life, are rooted in kindness and flower in goodwill. They oil the Masonic wheels and enable them to revolve without creaking. They smooth the path of all in the lodge and prove to all the truth of the ritualistic explanation of that more noble and glorious purpose to which we are taught to put the trowel. Well, I think even the seasoned master can learn something from that piece. That's a quality of a Freemason. We never stop learning or changing when new things come to light. It reminds me of a time when a friend of mine was going through some faith issues. He came to me because I was his friend and also because I'm also involved with religious council and interfaith ministry. He asked about his faith, questions that most do not. He asked if it was wrong to amend his beliefs based on other things he had read. In short, I told him a story. There was a man, we'll call him John, and John is on the police force trying to solve a murder. He finds the main suspect. Everything fits on this guy. We'll call the suspect Mike. So John gathers all the evidence on Mike he can, using all the techniques of all the detectives that have come before him. John takes it to court and puts Mike in jail for a long time. 20 years go by and Mike is still in jail, trying to appeal his case. But every chance John gets, he convicts him again and again. One day John reads the results of a new test called DNA, and it exonerates Mike from the murder, but John doesn't care. He has worked his whole life towards something and is too afraid of what will happen if he accepts the new evidence. So he pushes it away and denies it. In this story, I tried to convey to my friend that if new evidence has come to light for your faith, then it's absolutely imperative you accept it and amend your faith. You wouldn't let a man die in jail unnecessarily, would you? How is this any different? So now he is back on track and feels comfortable again in his beliefs because he constantly accepts new lessons and information. I have been after this friend to join the lodge for some time. He has assured me he is interested, but he is busy in his day-to-day right now, and I understand this. And it's important I do, because I would hate for him to come into the lodge and get turned off because the home life hasn't settled. Some of you have seen the post I put up last week on Facebook, which is a picture of the Dalai Lama. And I'm not sure if the Dalai Lama actually said it, but the quote on the picture was, "If science proves some part of Buddhism to be wrong, then Buddhism will have to change." Things like that bring about thoughts. In some people, they get scared that you're taking away their God. But in actuality, it just makes God that much bigger. This week's famous Freemason is John Brown, May 9th, 1800 to December 2nd, 1859. Militant American abolitionist John Brown's raid on the federal arsenal at Harper's Ferry, Virginia in 1859 made him a martyr to the anti-slavery cause and was instrumental in heightening sectional animosities that led to the American Civil War. He joined a local Masonic lodge, though he later quit the Masons after he became embroiled in a scandal surrounding the disappearance of William Morgan. His son, Brother John Brown Jr., is reputed to have been a Freemason, and he is also claimed to have been buried with Masonic honors. Raised May 11th, 1824, Hudson Lodge, number 68, Hudson, Ohio. That's it for this week. Remember to check out the Facebook page and follow on Twitter at Whence Came You. Go directly to the website wcypodcast.com for links to everything, like our show apps, which let you listen streaming rather than syncing. We're also on Stitcher Smart Radio, which has a new feature. You can download an episode and listen in airplane mode if you want. Make sure you use the promo code WhenceCameU with no spaces. The Midnight Freemason will be having some articles of mine published soon, but there are really great things happening there almost daily, so check that out. Again, links to all that and other things like Mackey's online Masonic Encyclopedia are on the website, wcypodcast.com. And real quick, I just want to give a thanks to the Shriners the official Shriners headquarters in Florida, followed us on Twitter, and I just want to say thanks to those guys. And so we're fortunate to simply be, because fortune favors the wealthy in heart. As Freemasons, we are indeed rich. Until next week, for Whence Came You? I'm Robert Johnson.